Welcome to the latest edition of City Parents Talk. I'm Anna Richards from City Parents, and today I'm delighted to be joined by Dr. Sarah Vora, a consultant psychiatrist and the author of The Mind Medic, Your Five Senses Guide to Leading a Calmer, Happier Life. Wellbeing is a topic we cover regularly at City Parents and one that's become close to many of us during this extraordinary year. So I'm really looking forward to hearing your perspective at a time that it seems more relevant than ever. Thank you for joining me today, Sarah. To start us off, please tell our listeners a little bit about yourself.
So I am a consultant psychiatrist. I've been a doctor for 12 years and I've specialised in mental health for the last 10 years. So in my day job, I work in a clinic setting. I work predominantly with children, young people who have a whole host of mental health difficulties from depression, anxiety, eating difficulties to self-harm, just to name a few. And outside of the clinic, I've forged this sort of online career really around trying to share lots of practical tips and tools for anyone who is struggling with their mental health, and just to look at ways in which they can optimize their mental well-being on a day-to-day basis, because I can only really make a small difference with the people that I see in clinic. And I think there's a lot of misinformation online, and I really wanted to cut through that misinformation and share sort of evidence-based tips and tools that I use in my clinic, but to reach a wider audience.
The online world is providing such opportunity, but quite a lot of risk there as well. Can you tell us some about some of these myths that you're looking to debunk in your book in particular?
I think the thing in particular is that online, you can't really sift out what's just hearsay and what is actual fact, and that's very, very difficult. And often we're blinded by numbers, we're blinded by status, and we don't really hold people necessarily to account, so we kind of take the information that they share with us on face value. So I think first and foremost, what I wanted to do is speak from a place of experience, because there's no doubt that people that struggle with mental health difficulties offer a wealth of information in terms of their own lived experience. It's so validating for someone else to hear that someone else has been through what they're going through. But I think often the things that worked for them are not necessarily going to translate to other people. So we're all different. And I think it's about showcasing different ways that you can look to support your mental well-being. I think that also the risk of lots of people now opening up about their mental health, you often face the backlash around people jumping on a trend or jumping on a bandwagon. And I think that that can be hugely damaging and hugely invalidating, because actually what we're finding in the last 2 or 3 years is because we're having more conversations around mental health, naturally people feel braver and feel more comfortable sharing their own stories. So I think to label someone as jumping on a bandwagon or that their experience is not valid because it's not serious enough can be really damaging. And so that was a myth that I was really keen to tear down, really. This idea that you have to be seriously unwell or seriously struggling with your mental health for those emotions to be valid.
And of course, amongst all that noise, particularly online, is celebrity culture, more celebrities coming out and talking about their own experiences. Are there any that you think are doing this particularly well in an honest and accurate way?
I think the likes of Matt Haig, Fern Cotton, Bryony Gordon, Porna Bell, just to name a few, are doing phenomenal things in this space. I think that they've really allowed people to feel more confident in sharing what's going on for them. I think more people are finding they're able to relate to the difficulties shared by these writers. And someone like Matt Haig, for instance, reaching, you know, children, reaching adults, older adults alike, is such a real skill to meet people on every level. I think that lived experience is so valuable. It can be really validating for someone to feel heard, to feel listened, to feel that someone else has walked in their shoes. And I think those subjective accounts can be really helpful in that sense.
I suppose for individuals trying to navigate this online world with so much out there now, one of the results of all this noise online is this tendency to compare yourself with others. And of course, we all portray a particular part of our lives on social media in particular. How would you advise people to get the best out of all of that, but avoid the worst? How to pick and choose a little bit? What would your approach be?
I think social media is not going to go anywhere. It's here to stay. And I think we need to learn to foster healthy relationships with it, because the pros are that it offers that human connection. If we struggle to relate with people in our real life, having people that we can relate to online who share the same interests can be really quite valuable. But I think particularly in the peak of lockdown, where we were all in our own homes and the temptation to constantly check in on what others were doing was very great, it comes with it some social comparison. And I think what's really important to bear in mind is how looking at someone else's highlights reel or what they portray on social media makes you personally feel. So as an example, I may be deciding to snooze my morning alarm, and rather than doing a workout, just having an extra few minutes or an extra hour in bed. And I may log onto social media and I may be faced with someone's post-workout selfie. And that may motivate me to get out of bed and to think, right, okay, no excuses. I'm just going to go and just go for a run around the block. So in that sense, that content, that comparison can be quite motivating. But if you're someone who has woken up on the wrong side of bed or is feeling quite down, maybe it's the time of the month, whatever it may be, and you're faced with that image, it may stir up different emotions for you. So it may lead to self-loathing, you feeling guilty that you snoozed your alarm, and it can make you feel less than and inadequate. So it's the same image, but it can have very different effects depending on where you're at that particular moment in time. So what I always encourage people to think about is when you log on to social media, check in with yourself. How do you feel, and what is the purpose of you accessing the content online? Is it a mindless scroll? Is it that you want to send a message to a friend? Is it that you want to be inspired and motivated? If so, go ahead. But if you know that you're feeling less than, if you know that actually logging on may have the opposite effect and may actually fuel feelings of inadequacy and guilt, then I'd probably take a pause, and maybe social media is not the right time for you this morning, this afternoon, a couple of days, whatever it may be. So I think really having that control over when and how you access social media can be really quite empowering.
You talked there about lockdown as an example of a particularly pressured time. We ran a webinar yesterday with Leanne Weaver, who's a wellbeing expert. She was looking at how we can best manage stress and avoid burnout. And at the beginning of the webinar, we asked the 74 participants a couple of questions. One of the questions was around how people rated their mental health during lockdown. The results were really interesting. They were very, very broad. So 28% rated their mental wellbeing during lockdown as either good or excellent, and yet 32% rated it poor, with 41% saying it was okay. Very broad range in results there. I think demonstrates the experience was so varied for people. There were obviously some good points and some very difficult ones as well. From your experience and conversations, what new challenges did lockdown and did COVID presenting to people on their mental health? And what positives are you also seeing that we might like to try and take forward?
I think the results from that poll are fascinating, and like you say, just go to show how varied people's experiences of the lockdown period were. And if you think about it, for many of us, lockdown may have been an opportunity just to press pause. Actually, we may have been running 100 miles per hour, commuting to and from. I know as a parent myself, juggling the demands of work as well as childcare can be incredibly difficult. And I think had a lockdown not happened, I don't think I would have pressed pause myself. So I think for a lot of people, it has given that moment of pause to really distill what's important. On the flip side, for a lot of people, they've experienced loss during this period. A loved one may have fallen ill as a result of coronavirus. Unfortunately, people may have been grieving during this time as well. And often with the uncertainty that's going around, there's the uncertainty around jobs. I think everyone's experience is so vast during this time. I think the common themes that have really come through that I've been seeing is really around that loss of routine and the blurring of boundaries between day and night. Because if you think about it, sort of pre-lockdown, if we were commuting into the city, we would have those natural pauses in our day. The commute would offer that real distinction between leaving behind our downtime, our home life, and commuting into an office space where our working life would begin. And similarly, if you're like me, where you're picking up kids from school, again, that sort of natural pause signifying the end of the school day. And those can be really helpful in providing those natural breaks. And breaks during the day are incredibly important. They're hugely restorative. They help to minimise our need for recovery at the end of the day. But the temptation when we're at home and when we don't have those visual cues or those natural pauses to the day is that we work every hour God sends. And we may find ourselves firing off a work email when we've barely got out of bed or we're still in our pyjamas. And the working day, before we know it, has begun and it's 5 or 6 p.m. and we've not taken a break from our computer. So I think for many, it's that real blurring of the boundaries, that need to always be on, to always be seen to be working, and feeling guilty if we take a break, which is something that we would have done in pre-lockdown anyway. I also think one of the challenges for a lot of parents has been around the juggle. So the juggle around having to work, having to be a parent, and then this new carved career for themselves of being a teacher as well. And how do you juggle the demands of homeschooling your child in addition to trying to commit to your work plans and then running the household as well? And the thing that I found is that people didn't really exercise any self-compassion. You know, that's a really difficult task for anyone to take on. And it's near on impossible to put in 100% in all those tasks. So I think the biggest bit of advice that I really shared with people was this idea of just exercising self-compassion. Again, I'm going to use that really overly used adjective, unprecedented. These are unprecedented times, and no one really knows how we best navigate through it. All we can do is do our best. And I think the moment we accept that, the moment that pressure lifts from us.
I think extremely wise words we need to take on board. You've talked about the natural pauses in the day and how they are harder to find, I suppose, with us working from home. I'm conscious that people have been working from home for a long time now, and now that looks set to continue even further. And I wonder if people may be feeling slightly detached from the teams they're part of in a professional environment. Perhaps their motivation is starting to wane. Have you got any advice on how to build those relationships, build that feeling of camaraderie, even when they're not in an office environment together, and to bring back some of that motivation and drive?
I think one of the tools that I shared very early on in the lockdown period was this idea of being prepared for working from home. And, you know, I wanted to share this really, really simple acronym. And it's really about trying to provide a bit of structure to your day and really about optimizing what we know is going to help. So things like movement, things like social connection, and eating well and keeping hydrated. So P is for plan. So whether or not it's the night before or the morning, over your breakfast with the rest of the family present, planning your day. So at what time will your working day start and what time will it end? So again, having those clear distinctions, what time you're planning to take a break, and jot it down so you can actually visualize what you're going to achieve that day. R is routine. So again, as I mentioned previously, the thing that we struggle most when we're working from home is the boundaries being very blurred. So the routine of getting up, getting showered, dressing up into workwear, even if it's a fresh pair of loungewear, but just something that sets apart from your down loungy pajamas into, you know, working with purpose. E is exercise. So I don't mean that you have to sign up to the latest online HIIT class, but just a bit of movement every day, at least 30 minutes. And actually, even better is going outside for that movement as well. So exercise, it's not so much for what it can do for us aesthetically, but for what it can do for our mental health. So it can lift our mood, it can improve our concentration and focus. It can improve our energy levels and it can also help with sleep. So hugely important. And actually having exercise earlier in the day and going outside for it and exposing ourselves to that natural sunlight can be really helpful in resetting our body's natural sleep-wake cycles and again help with sleep. P is prioritize. So as a family, think about what are the absolute must-dos for that day and don't overwhelm yourself with any more than three or five tasks. Because the temptation is that if you're at home, you have to always be busy, always be doing something to be productive. But actually, what we know is the more tasks that we set ourselves, the less our attention span on any given task. And actually, what we might find is come the end of the day, we've not hit, the third thing on our to-do list. And again, that can fuel feelings of inadequacy and fuel guilt. So prioritize what absolutely needs to be done. And even if that is something as simple as getting everyone showered and dressed and fed in the day, so be it. That is an important priority. A is about avoiding comparisons. So again, we mentioned around that sort of social media comparisons, checking in with ourselves. If we're feeling that that's going to fuel feelings of inadequacy, trying to steer clear of those. R is reaching out. So if we've got colleagues that we would normally stop for a chat at a water cooler or go for a coffee around the corner, actually building in those virtual catch-ups can be really very important. So we've got all these platforms, these wonderful platforms where we're able to have those face-to-face connections, where we're able to host multiple people on the same platform. So I think mimicking those real-life connections that we would do in the office, such as a mid-morning break or a mid-morning coffee, firing up the laptop and having a chat with someone and not feeling that you're in this alone. We're all in this together, but I think we can't underestimate the importance of social connection, particularly at a time like this. And then finally, eat well and keep hydrated. So actually make the most of the fact that your kitchen's only a stone's throw away and not having a desk lunch, making sure that you push the lid of your laptop down, you turn off your phone, and you have time to pause, to eat, to hydrate yourself. Again, which is imperative when it comes to remaining focused throughout the day.
Such a practical guide there. Thank you so much for sharing that. My next question was really going to surround our members who are predominantly working parents in corporate roles and have a lot of spinning plates, as we all do in their lives, and plan their lives with meticulous planning and organisation. In these times that are so uncertain and changing constantly, I wonder how you might advise people to manage this uncertainty and perhaps the lack of control. But I suspect a lot of that has been covered in your previous answer around taking control of the day. Is that right? Is there anything else you would add there?
Absolutely. I think it is about taking control of the day. And the other thing that I really want to be clear is if you feel sad, feel sad. If you feel, happy, feel happy. If you feel angry, feel angry. And I think what I don't want people to think is that we're not entitled to feel negative emotion, that we have to remain positive at all times. But I suppose it's thinking about how we manage and challenge those negative emotions and encouraging everyone within the household to be really open and honest in their communication with one another is key.
You mentioned that your specialism is working with young people and children. I wondered how you suggest people broach this broad topic of mental health and well-being with children in particular.
I think this is something that you can introduce from a very young age. And one of the things that I talk about is something called a mental health traffic light system. So getting kids used to communicating how they feel in the home environment is really very helpful. So the traffic light, you can kind of get creative with your kids, use it as a homeschooling opportunity, and to basically make a traffic light out of card, stick it on your fridge, have different arrows for different members of the family, have a chat about what each light stands for. So for instance, a red for my husband might be that he's had a really tough day at work. He just needs 5 or 10 minutes breather to himself before coming downstairs. A red for my daughter might be that we've run out of tomato ketchup and she's really very upset about it. A red for me might be that I'm just feeling really overwhelmed and I just need a quick bath and a soak and some time out for myself. So often what we find is in moments of stress, not everyone naturally wants to open up about it, but I think having some system in place at home to non-verbally communicate that, so that if I walk into the room and I see that my husband's arrow is on a red, I know instantly the sorts of things that might have led him to put it on the red and the sorts of things that will be helpful for him in that moment. And similarly with my daughter. And if you're noticing that it hasn't shifted, you know, within the course of the day or within a couple of days, it invites a conversation. You know, I've noticed that you're still on a red and, you know, I've bought you a bottle of tomato ketchup and you're still, you know, on a red. And again, it just encourages that open, honest dialogue. And the other person feels validated, they feel seen. I think the other thing that I encourage people to do is thinking about everyone's natural baseline in the household. So what I mean by that is, for instance, my daughter, she's 5. And she has a pattern that she follows from the moment she wakes up to the moment she goes to sleep. So in brief, she normally wakes up about 6 o'clock in the morning. She bounds into my bedroom. She's generally very chatty, very loud in the morning, the opposite of what I am. And she demands to get dressed. We get her dressed. She has her breakfast and she wants to watch her favorite cartoons before going to school. And when I drop her off at school, she's generally very content to go. If I noticed that she wasn't bounding into my bedroom until 7:30 and that it was a real effort to try and get her ready for school, that she was off her food or she was showing little interest in watching her favourite cartoon or getting her out of the door to school was near on impossible, there's a clear shift from her usual baseline, which invites a conversation. It might indicate that there's something going on for her physically. Maybe she's feeling physically poorly, or it might indicate that there's something with her mental health. So again, it invites that conversation. I've noticed that you're not coming into me until 7:30, or you're not wanting to watch this program anymore, or is there anything that's happening at school that's making you feel quite sad? So I think, again, noticing those shifts, again, can invite that open and honest dialogue within the house.
The webinar I mentioned that we ran yesterday, as well as asking people about their mental well-being during lockdown, we asked people how they'd rate their mental health at the moment, and the results were perhaps unsurprising. 81% of people rated their mental health as either poor or okay, which feels very, very high percentage on a very low rating. To finish on a positive, if we can, and you may have covered lots of this already, but what would be the takeaways that you advise people on how to take care of their mental well-being in whatever situations they are, and appreciating that people's circumstances and baselines are all very different? What are your overall guiding principles in looking after ourselves?
So one of the tools that I talk about within my book, The Mind Medic, is around the 5 senses method. So often when we're feeling out of sorts, we might not necessarily be able to pinpoint exactly what's going on for us, but the 5 senses just provides that really simple structure that helps people to have a think about what might be going on for them. So take a pause and think, is there anything that I've seen, heard, felt, smelt, or tasted that could explain why I feel the way I do? So for me, I know I was feeling a bit out of sorts yesterday, and I know that I spent far too much time on my phone, so sense of sight, that I was just seeing these breaking news headlines, the change of restrictions, 6 months emblazoned everywhere. And that wasn't helpful for me, actually, to continue to be checking in on my screens, refreshing the news, only to see the same negative press and coverage wasn't helpful. So actually what I'm doing today is actually learning from that experience and setting myself realistic screen curfews. It may be the sense of hearing. So maybe one of the things that you have noticed during the lockdown period is that you're in an overly critical relationship and your other half is constantly belittling you or putting you down. It may force you to reevaluate whether that relationship is serving you anymore. So sense of hearing. If we think about things like sense of taste, so I know during the lockdown period in particular, my kettle's literally just behind me, and I would find myself constantly just on reflex going to boil and having it yet another coffee or a tea. And by the end of the afternoon, I found that I was feeling quite wired and quite angsty, and then struggling to sleep. So again, that's a simple change that I can make, which is to look at my caffeine intake, to making sure that I set myself a caffeine curfew, that I'm not drinking into the afternoon and evening and then struggling to sleep. Then thinking about sense of feeling. So for me, exercise is a huge thing that I used to go to the gym, and then the lockdown period forced me to evaluate actually how I was going to make sure that I maintained that movement over the next few months. And rather than just submitting to the fact that I couldn't go to the gym, getting outside and getting that movement in every day was hugely important. And then finally, sense of smell. So we've already mentioned this idea that when we go online, we're faced with people's highlights reel, but having the confidence to smell what I call the BS, so smelling the nonsense, people will only portray the highlights. So again, really being strict with yourself in terms of setting limits, or when you are accessing things online, just taking it with a pinch of salt and reminding yourself that people are only going to upload what they're experiencing on a positive day. So what I would encourage people to do is to walk yourself through those senses and think about whether there's anything, any simple changes that you can put into place that will help you to feel calmer and happier. And actually, those simple changes practiced day after day will serve you in the long run.
I think those principles are very simple and clear, and a bit of self-reflection, I'm sure, would do us all lots of good. Thank you so much for joining me today, Sarah. I found our conversation incredibly useful. There's quite a lot I'm going to look at for my own life, and I'm sure lots of our members will feel the same. And thank you to all our listeners as well for tuning in. If you'd like to find out more about City Parents, please visit us at cityparents.co.uk. You can follow us on LinkedIn, Twitter, or Facebook, and you can stay tuned for more from City Parents Talk coming soon.